Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. According to the 1974 American Pie song, lyrics recorded by Don McLean, today, 60 years ago, was the day the music died. What is the meaning of this statement? Is it A, that this was the day that folk music went from acoustic to electric? B, that this was the day that Buddy Holly, Ritchie Valens, and the Big Bopper died in a plane crash? Is it C, that was the day 45 RPM replaced 33 and a third RPM records as the standard recording? Or was it D, that was the day when singers started recording obscene lyrics? Question number two. It was on this day back in 1964 that the governor of Indiana declared that a particular song was pornographic. What was the name of this song that the governor asked the state's radio stations to not play? Hint, here's a snippet from that song. Apologies if you happen to have heard something obscene. So, what is this song's title? The answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of February the 1st. Well, it was on this day back in 1809 that composer Jacob Ludwig Felix Mendelssohn was born. German romantic composer, pianist, and conductor Felix Mendelssohn wrote Overture to a Midsummer Night's Dream and founded the Leipzig Conservatory of Music. 1809. Today. And it was 70 years ago today, 1949, that the first 45 RPM records were released. Vinyl records typically come in three speeds, 33, 45, and 78 rotations per minute, RPM. The slower a record turns, the worse the audio sounds. Therefore, in order to provide the best sound possible, the record needs to turn faster, higher RPM. However, when a record turns faster, the amount of information it can hold on a record is reduced, thus having a shorter playback time. Consequently, 45 RPM recordings were basically limited to just two songs, one on side A and one on the flip side, side B. The desire to improve sound quality and yet provide adequate playing time is an issue that remains to this day. But in the early days of audio recording, it proved to be a major hurdle. 45 RPM records on this day, 1949.
Oh, the band marched on in formation.
Wilco's Sky Blue Sky introduces our country music news. It's entitled Wilco's Genius is Ready to Reveal His Secrets. This is written by Patrick Doyle and published in Rolling Stone magazine, January 2019 issue. Jeff Twee opens up about Uncle Tupelo, Wilco, and the opioid addiction that almost killed him. Jeff Tweedy thought Wilco's 2004 album, A Ghost Is Born, would be his last. At the time, his addiction to Vicodin and his lifelong anxiety issues had spiraled so far out of control that on tour, he routinely fell asleep in his bathtub without being sure he'd wake up. He wrote songs like the gorgeous elegy Hummingbird for his young sons, who could turn it when they were older, to have some deeper connection to the dad they had lost. Tweedy's new memoir, Let's Go, So We Can Get Back, is full of moments like these, revealing the intense turmoil behind his best songs. The songwriter, who got sober in 2004, says that reliving his personal lows was necessary. "I'm an addict," says Tweedy, 51. "It's important for me to get to that pain and all of that awful stuff immediately." He writes vividly of his childhood in the factory town of Belleville, Illinois, where it seemed predetermined that he would work on the railroad like his hard-drinking father. Instead, he found an escape at record stores and befriended a fellow teenager named Jay Farrar. They formed the group Uncle Tupelo in the late 1980s, just as Tweedy's musical identity was taking shape in the space between the Minutemen and Woody Guthrie. "When I found folk and early country music, that seemed like a more artful way to express your anger to me," he says. Hank Williams was as punk rock as anything. It felt more honest for me to play an acoustic guitar.
Time wouldn't seem so bad to me now. Oh, if I didn't die, I should be.
Luciano Pavarotti performing Nessun Dorma from the Puccini opera Tarantò introduces our classical music news. It's an article entitled "Critics Who Demand Opera Sung in Original Language Want to Keep the Riffraff Away," director suggests. This is printed in the Telegraph News by Hannah Furness on the 13th of January, 2019. Is one of the key and most controversial cornerstones of English national opera, dividing performers, critics, and audience members alike over its policy to sing the operas of Europe only in the English language. But some of those who argue for change are perpetuating cultural elitism by hoping to keep the riffraff away, the company's former music director has said. Mark Wigglesworth, who left E&O in 2016, warned of the unspoken view of some of those hoping to see opera in Italian or German, claiming they take a certain pleasure in making it inaccessible. The rumors whispering through the cracks of the London Coliseum are alarming for those who believe English national opera has a vital role to play in making opera accessible to all, he said. If the language policy that forms such a pillar of its identity is abandoned, it would be a betrayal of the company's most valuable mission to perform opera in a way that can be understood by the largest number of people. Writing for classical music website Bach Track, in response to a debate over E&O's English language-only policy, Wigglesworth argued that accessibility was not really about the price of a ticket, but performances that reward people's decision to come by being understood. A more unspoken view is one that thinks singing in a foreign language keeps the riffraff away, he said. An accusation of vanity is unfair to the majority of original language devotees, but I do believe a certain pleasure in cultural elitism exists, even if only by a few. Claiming Verdi and Wagner were energetically supportive of translations, he added, it would have been inconceivable to them that the words wouldn't have been understood. Wigglesworth, who resigned from E&O in 2016, amid budget cuts and changes to the company, added, without pride in the past and faith in its future, English National Opera will struggle to maintain its distinctive raison d'etat. As E&O used to say, opera in English speaks for itself. E&O, categorically denies its English language-only policy is at risk of changing, as a spokesman emphasized the company's belief that it adds to making opera accessible for all. Its website states, "We believe that singing in English enhances the emotional connection between performers and audiences." The opinion piece followed an interview by the same publication with Barney Koski, an Australian theater and opera director, who said he had advised Daniel Kramer, E&O's artistic director, to, quote-unquote, bite the bullet and get rid of the all-singing-in-English thing. He goes on, "You can still be called English National Opera, but you need to get rid of that, because it just smells slightly provincial in the world of subtitles and people being able to research what the thing means," said Koski. "People may disagree with me, but I just don't want to hear Italian opera in English, and I don't think most of the audience do." Michel Legrand's Windmills of Your Mind introduces our jazz music news. It's an article entitled Michel Legrand, Oscar-winning composer of Windmills of Your Mind, dies at 86. This is published in the Washington Post by Tim Griving on the 26th of January 2019. Michel Legrand, a French composer with more than 200 screen credits, notably the jazzy movie opera The Umbrellas of Cherbourg, and whose tunefully romantic music for The Thomas Crown Affair, Summer of 42, and Yentl brought him Oscars, died January 26th at his home in Paris. He was 86. As a teenage piano virtuoso in post-World War II Paris, Mr. Legrand irked his classical conservatory teachers when he turned his focus towards jazz. But his penchant for seductive tunes, informed by a classicist's knowledge of the orchestra, made him one of the best-known and most prolific composers of his generation. After a run of hit-making jazz albums, including collaborations with trumpeter Miles Davis and saxophonist John Coltrane, Mr. Legrand drew international attention in 1964 with The Umbrellas of Cherbourg. Mr. Legrand was lured to Hollywood for the Steve McQueen, Faye Dunaway heist film, The Thomas Crown Affair, in 1968. And found an Oscar gold mine. Their song, The Windmills of Your Mind, with a hypnotic melody spinning like its subject, earned the composer his first Academy Award. While some critics sniffed at Mr. Legrand's film music as lushly saccharine, middle-of-the-road easy listening, there was no doubt he hit a commercial sweet spot. Michel Jean Legrand was born in a Paris suburb on February 24, 1932. He was 3 years old when his father, Raymond, a prominent conductor and composer, walked out on the family, leaving him in the care of his mother and an older sister. He found security in an old piano. It was one of the few things my father forgot to take with him when he left, Mr. Legrand told the Toronto Star in 2009. I sat down and put my two hands on the piano and began playing, trying to recreate a song I'd heard on the radio. It became my only friend, my only love. By 9, he was such a skilled player that the Paris Conservatory made an exception to its minimum age policy of 14 by admitting him. He won a slew of awards at the conservatory, but found himself drawn to American jazz, saying that after hearing Trumpster, Dizzy Gillespie, in a Paris concert, he felt he had, quote-unquote, discovered another world, another planet. Because of his commercial pull, he was given carte blanche for one of his next albums, Le Grand Jazz, 1958, which featured reinterpretations of jazz standards by an all-star team that included Miles Davis, John Coltrane, and Bill Evans. Decades later, Los Angeles Times jazz critic Leonard Feather called Le Grand Jazz unquestionably one of the most successful orchestral jazz albums of all time. Mr. Legrand won 5 Grammy Awards and in 1990 was inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame. Joy and pain are the rhythms of life, Mr. Legrand once told an interviewer about the tensions he said define the craftsmanship of song. It's impossible to play one chord without striking the other. That contradiction is life's mystique. In music, there is profound exaltation of expression, but for a moment of high-level happiness, there are 10 tons of sweat and sorrow and fatigue and fury. And in music research and technology, we have this article titled, The Future of Entertainment. As AI rises and social media rules, technology is scarier and more exciting than ever. Here's how it's changing music, TV, sports, and more. Welcome to the real-life Thunderdome. MSG Sphere, a wildly ambitious tech-first venue, is rising over the Las Vegas desert. This is written, by the way, by Brian Hyatt, published in Rolling Stone magazine, December 2018 issue. What are the MSG Sphere fast facts? Well, it opens in 2021. The height of the building, 30 stories. Diameter, 500 feet or 1.5 football fields. Exterior size, 600,000 square feet, fully programmable. Capacity, 18,000. Intended uses, concerts and musical residencies. Esports events, immersive storytelling experiences. What does it take to create the world's most audaciously advanced concert venue? The answer, according to billionaire James Dolan, whose Madison Square Garden company broke ground on Las Vegas, MSG Sphere in September, is 157,000 ultra-directional speakers, a 3.5-acre spherical ultra-high res video screen, and vibrating floors, all wedged into an enormous dome built from scratch. His modest goal, as MSG Venture CEO David Dibble tells it, to reinvent the live entertainment business with a technology-driven facility. Touring acts can certainly play the MSG Sphere, but the venue seems geared for residencies and special projects that could fully exploit its capabilities. There's that LED screen which arcs over the audience, like a planetarium times 10, Dibble says. The speaker systems, which will be hidden in the walls, are from a German startup, Holoplot, that specializes in targeting narrow sound beams, so each section gets its own sound. Per MSG, audio in different languages could even be beamed to different sections. The haptic flooring system, meanwhile, is all about the bass, explains Dibble. The lowest bass response, instead of being transmitted through the air, is transmitted through the floor, directly into your feet or the chair in which you sit. With another sphere planned for London, MSG's hopes are high. 3 years from now, Dolan promised at the groundbreaking, you'll say, I had no idea this was what it was going to be. It is that crazy and that incredible a project.
I can't sleep at night. I can't eat a bite. 'Cause the gal I love, she don't treat me right.
John Shane performing Crazy Blues from his 2018 album, Gettin' Handy with the Blues, a tribute to W.C. Handy, introduces our local music news. The International Blues Challenge winner is from North Carolina, beating out more than 260 musicians. The International Blues Challenge 2019 draws competitors from across the world. Durham blues musician John Shane won the solo duo category in the finals at Orpheum Theater in Memphis. This was initially published in the News and Observer on the 28th of January, 2019. Blues.org, IBC Awards number 35, adds, the International Blues Challenge represents the worldwide search for those blues bands and solo duo blues acts ready to perform on the international stage, yet just needing that extra big break. Each affiliate of the Blues Foundation has the right to send a band and a solo duo act to represent its organization at the IBC. The IBC is judged by blues professionals from across the world who have years of experience in listening to, producing, and creating blues music. The Blues Foundation has established a set of criteria by which all acts are evaluated throughout the 5 days of the IBC. And in solo duo first place, John Shane, representing Triangle Blues Society. John Shane is a veteran singer-songwriter who's been turning heads for years with his words, his fiery acoustic guitar work, and his evolved musical style, combining improvised Piedmont blues with bluegrass, swing, and ragtime. He's released 12 albums to date. Shane's newest release, November 2018, is Tomorrow Will Be Yesterday Soon.
And now I got the crazy blues since my baby went away. I ain't got no time to lose.
And once again, that was John Shane from Durham, North Carolina, performing Crazy Blues. So how did you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our second question, it was on this day back in 1964 that the governor of Indiana declared that which song was pornographic? What was the name of that song that the governor asked the Indiana Broadcasters Association to prevent the state's radio stations from playing? And I played a snippet from this song as a hint. Correct answer. Louie Louie by the Kingsmen. As noted in songfacts.com, while much of the song's notoriety comes from the indecipherable lyrics in the composer's 1955 original recording, the words are quite clear. The song is simply about a sailor who spends 3 days traveling to Jamaica to see his girlfriend. There was probably a leak somewhere that the lyrics were obscene. This was the most ingenious marketing scheme ever. The FBI were never able to determine the actual lyrics used. The Kingsmen singer admitted that he sung far away from the microphone, which caused the fuzzy sound, and that the notoriety was initiated by the record company. The FBI investigation spanned offices in several states, with technicians listening to the song at different speeds, trying to discern any obscene lyrics. None were ever found. And the answer to our first question, according to the 1974 American Pie song lyrics recorded by Don McLean, today, 60 years ago, was the day the music died. What is meant by that statement? Was it A, that was the day that folk music went from acoustic to electric? B, that was the day Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, and the Big Bopper died in a plane crash? C, that was the day 45 RPM replaced 33 1/3 RPM records as the standard recording? Or was it D, that was the day when singers started recording obscene lyrics? And the correct answer is answer B. That was the day Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, and the Big Bopper died in a plane crash. As noted in a 2015 article in the Washington Post, the music died because Buddy Holly merely wanted what every touring musician wants to do, laundry. Shoved into unheated buses on a winter dance party tour in 1959, Holly, tired of rattling through the Midwest with dirty clothes, chartered a plane on February 3 to fly from Clear Lake, Iowa, to Fargo, North Dakota, where he hoped he would make an appointment with a washing machine. Joining him on the plane were Richie Valens, and after future country star Waylon Jennings gave up his seat, J.P. Richardson, a.k.a. the Big Bopper. Taking off in bad weather with a pilot not certified to do so, the plane crashed, killing everyone aboard. The toll was incalculable. The singers of Peggy Sue and Donna and La Bamba were dead. Holly was just 22. Incredibly, Valens was just 17. Rock and roll would never be the same. On this day, 60 years ago today, 13 years later, Don McLean wrote a song about this tragedy, American Pie, an 8.5-minute epic with an iconic lyric about the day the music died. So in honor of the day the music died, let's close out today's music review program with just a slice of American Pie.
I can't remember if I cried when I read about his widowed bride. But something touched me deep inside the day the music died.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. And as we leave you, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Music Review is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast in the TRRS website, TriangleReadingService.org. Now, if you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me, Randy Thompson at 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.
I know that you're in love with him, 'cause I saw you dancing in the gym. You both kicked off your shoes.